Do, 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 do. I haven't quite nailed the bass line yet.
One day you can do a cappella version.
There it is. Hey, everybody. I'm Amy Scott, in for Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. At least we try, right?
And I'm Sabri Benishore, in for Kai Rizdal. Thank you to everyone for joining this Friday for Economics on Tap, whether you are joining us on the YouTube live stream or listening to the podcast.
We've got some news, and then we'll do a round of half full, half empty. And first, Sabri, I guess we should check in. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking DayQuil, which is really
straight from the bottle, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, because those caps get so disgusting. I don't know how anyone uses those caps because they get so sticky and gross, and you put them down and you're so sick you forget to wash them. And then they're just, there's always some left over. It's a real product flaw in my view. So it's just,
so are you feeling okay?
I mean, I felt better. I took a nap. And actually, oh my God, I had a horrible dreams that I overslept and I was actually in the office in my pajamas and trying to get on the Make Me Smart Zoom, and everyone was there, but I couldn't get on, and I was walking around in my underwear. It was a horrible stress dream. And I
classic
woke up
radio
was,
dream, yeah. I'm telling you. So I have made myself an old-fashioned today. Weather is finally starting to get a little warmer here, and this has been my winter drink, so I feel like we're on the cusp of shifting to something a little more, I don't know, light. But I can't really top DayQuil. It tastes about the same, don't you think?
They do kind of taste similar. Okay, well, so I guess now we should do the news, huh?
I guess so, yeah. Do you want to go first or do you want me to start?
Oh, you go right ahead.
Okay. So happy Earth Day, everybody.
Right.
This is, I'm going to start with something that's kind of a downer and then go to kind of something more happy. So I don't know if you use Google. I actually don't really for the most part. But today I saw their doodle. You know, every holiday or like significant event, they change the thing you see on the homepage. And today I noticed it's these time-lapse photos from Google Earth and other sources. And they're showing basically the impact of climate change over time. It's pretty stunning. Like they've got a time lapse of the snow disappearing from Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, a glacier retreating in Greenland, coral bleaching on the Great Barrier Reef. I mean, it's really stark, but also kind of cool that we have this technology that I think they say they're using it to kind of empower people to make change. But honestly, like seeing it in front of your eyes is pretty dramatic. So check it out. It's pretty interesting, pretty sobering, but also I think potentially could lead to some change. Then the other one I wanted to talk about is something I saw in Bloomberg just after I finished hosting Marketplace, which is that the Biden administration is finalizing plans to make Pfizer's COVID-19 pill, which I don't know if I can say right, Paxlovid, available at any pharmacy in the United States. And an administration official spoke, you know, anonymously to kind of give a preview of this. I guess we'll get more details next week, but it's an oral antiviral pill that can reduce the effects and the severity of COVID-19. And it's been pretty hard to get in a lot of places since it was approved in December. I don't know if you've had any experience trying to chase this down, but so it's now available, I guess, at 20,000 locations around the country, but now, you know, as soon as this plan is finalized, any pharmacy that wants it will be able to order it directly from the federal government. Merck has its own version of an antiviral treatment, which is also starting to get more widely available. But this is good news. I mean, cases are rising in a lot of places with this BA2 subvariant. And this drug has been shown to be really effective at preventing hospitalizations and death. It's also, of course, good news for Pfizer. The drug is expected to be one of the fastest-selling treatments of all time. One forecaster said revenue for this year is predicted at $24 billion. So there's that.
Wow. Wow. I wonder if people will just, like, just, you know, down it like DayQuil from the bottle, you know, just like that the slightest cold, they'll just sort of throw the whole kitchen sink at it and they'll just get it just in case, no matter what. I will do that.
I hope not. I hope people use it responsibly. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much it costs. Like, I think there are a lot of questions. Also, the federal government is still trying to get funding to pay for its all the doses it's ordering of this stuff. So I don't know. We'll see. But I have been on a couple of text chains with friends, like telling me where it is and where they could get it. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how this. Well, it's just another tool, right, in the arsenal of trying to get to some normal, right?
Yeah, and it sounds like maybe it's less specific than the vaccines too. I mean, because each variant seems to evade the vaccines slightly differently. To some extent, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, as we get like further
and hopefully
further
this
away.
Remains effective.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was looking
so
at a couple things. Yeah. One was an article in Foreign Policy by Kharosh Diabari, who was basically saying, you know, let's look at history and ask whether sanctions are actually going to work on Russia. And he said, just look at Iran. You know, that country has been under sanctions for decades, decades, decades. And it shares a few things with Russia. Number one, it has energy. It produces energy. You know, that it's always going to have that, and someone's always going to want it somewhere, somehow, in the international economy. And sometimes we'll even be given a green light to sell it, you know, in Russia's case. And he said, you know, when your problem with a regime is fundamental to its nature, just like people, you know, no country or government is going to say, yeah, gosh, it has gotten so expensive to shop now. I think I'm going to rethink the entire panoply of principles and ideologies on which decades of my political system have been built, you know. They're not going to just like dismantle that. Yeah. and, you know, granted, Russia is not quite the same thing as Iran. But, you know, I think the analogy applies. So, you know, the counter argument is that, okay, but sanctions are a lot cheaper than war, you know, than expanding war, than military intervention. So it's not probably that they're a great idea. It's just that they're the least horrible idea.
That's all we've got, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was also struck by the demise of CNN Plus and Netflix, which I know we've covered a bunch on the shows. But it just, the thing about CNN Plus is I think that could have worked if they had been able to do live breaking news stuff on the streaming service, but they could not because they're locked into these carrying agreements with cable, basically. They can't bring you CNN, like cable version of CNN, to streaming because of those agreements. It's sort of like these chains of the past are kind of holding them back. And that was one of the reasons that was given for why, this niche, you know, this niche offering, whatever to call it, was thought to not, it's not going to work. That's why, you know, the plug was pulled. I don't know. It's just going to be very interesting to see what sticks on the wall, you know, in the streaming world.
Yeah. I had a friend who was saying, you know, he signed up for it and didn't realize that it didn't come with access to CNN. Like, wait a minute. That's kind of, you know, a package, right? But that is a huge challenge. It is tricky. And it's interesting to see. I mean, as Stephanie Hughes reported today, it's sort of a missed opportunity to see what this could have looked like, streaming news.
Totally.
We'll have to wait, I guess, for the next effort. All right, well, do you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
I feel like before we go, we're going to play a game, right? But before we go there, I just, some listeners have been wanting to see your plants. I mean, you have a lot, I can see, and I know that's just a fraction, right?
Yeah, I counted one time, and I had 100 plants inside, and then we have on the roof of the building, which does not belong to us, to my apartment, but they have, like, graciously allowed me to, like, put a bunch of plants out
there. They've given you air rights?
Well, they've not taken them away, is how I think it's probably a better phrase. But I put, like, an irrigation system out it's connected to my shower, and it goes out the window and then, like, onto the building to keep everything hydrated. It looks nice in the summer. Right now, it's kind of desolate. Okay, so I can't, like, move my laptop around very well, but I'll give you, like, I don't know what you can see there. Anyway, I have these curtains that I put up to block the light from my eyes, because I was sitting here at the beginning of the pandemic working every day. And some of these grow lights are like heavy duty, like the ones used in marijuana farms, and they put out UV. And I would like, I started like not being able to see well in the evening. I think it was getting like night blindness from sitting next to the grow lights for too long. Anyway, so now I have curtains that I put up, but I took them down for us. But here's one plant that I like. Oh God.
Ooh, that's cool. So yeah, it's called super long.
Yeah, it's super long, and it grows on trees, and it's called a mistletoe cactus, and it's found. The interesting thing about it is that hang on, let me cut this back. Interesting about it is that you know, all cacti evolved in Latin America, South America. That's where they are found, like naturally, and this is the one single cactus that somehow traveled to Africa and Sri Lanka, and nobody
like on
knows
the back
how
of a turtle
there.
Or something.
Yeah, that because like they were like, well, how
amazing.
Could that be? Yeah, so they think maybe it was some sort of maybe now extinct. I mean, there's a bunch of explanations, but it could be like a now extinct bird that like pooped out the seeds in Sri Lanka and then went extinct or something. Anyway, that's
those
wow. Yeah,
well, that's super cool. We got to do a whole show on Sabri's plants at some point.
Well, yeah, when we want to, for the last ever episode.
For our final episode.
So wait, now we have the game, right?
Yeah.
Half full, half empty. Hosted by our very own Drew Jostad. Drew, take it away.
Are you half full or half empty on Netflix with ads?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to say half empty on the idea of it. I mean, as someone pointed out, I think on Marketplace, that's basically like basic cable, you know, paying for service and having to watch ads, which is like the worst of both worlds.
Yeah. I'll say I'm half full on that just because that's what I grew up with. But maybe the commercials will be good. Maybe.
You know, my kids, because they've grown up in the age of streaming, they haven't seen a lot of commercials. So when they get, during the Olympics or something, they make us watch every commercial because they love it. So, I mean, you raise a good point, right? There is some like cultural literacy that happens from watching ads that this generation is missing out on.
Hmm.
I don't know.
All right, next.
Or maybe they'll revolt.
Oh, sorry.
No, go.
Next, the USPS is slowing first-class package delivery to lower costs. Are you half full or half empty?
I mean, I'm half full on that, I guess, because I don't remember the last time that I used the postal service for shipping. Everything I get is from Amazon, and they're kind of fast. So I guess I mean, if it's saving them money, then good for them.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sad. I love the postal service. You know, and yeah. It's already slowed down so much. I've had so many things just disappear. I would say I'm half empty. I mean, something's got to change, right? I mean, they need either more funding or a total overhaul. And I'm sympathetic to those who are trying to like keep this business alive in the age of Amazon and all these competitors and delivery services, but yeah, I like my post office.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also, Sabri lives in New York City where everything is at your doorstep, right? And I think for those of us who, especially in rural places where sometimes the post office is all you got, right?
Oh, yeah, that's such a good point.
It's really different.
Yeah. Well, now I feel like a monster.
Sabri.
No, I love the post office too.
Right. Okay. We're pro post office.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you half full or half empty on Earth Day?
Whoa.
You want to be a monster?
No.
Who's going to say half empty? The plant
half
guy.
Empty.
He's like, boo.
Yeah. Of course, half full. You know, it is a little. My friend just pointed this out on Instagram. He was like, all y'all, you know, supporting Earth Day. Well, you're also like buying one-time use outfits for parties and throwing them out. And, you know, you think like I remember there have been like Earth Day celebrations and they show the footage afterwards and there's all this garbage everywhere. And no, obviously it's great to bring attention to, you know, the environment and planet. But it's, you know, it's also a problem, which is the sort of sad part about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this way, there's, you know, it's like Black History Month or Women's History Month. There's a way of kind of confining our awareness and our discussion about major issues to these certain time periods. And then, like, we did it, so we're going to move on, right? We'll talk about that next year. So I think in that way, it can be troubling. But I was reading about the history of it today. It started in 1970, partly inspired by this major oil spill off the coast of Santa Barbara. And I was looking at the pictures of like community cleanups, like kids out with brooms and teach-ins and protests all over the country. And it was super inspiring. And, you know, it came out of a time of a tremendous social unrest and upheaval, the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, the labor movement. And so with that context, like I have a renewed appreciation for Earth Day. You know, forget about the company marketing and stuff. That's, you know, I'm over that. Although I did just talk about that Google story, which is, you know, kind of marketing. But anyway, yeah, definitely pro-Earth. I'm going to say that. So I'm half full.
Amy Scott comes out in favor of Earth.
I feel like that's a fairly safe position to take, right?
Okay, well, the timed entry reservation systems at national parks may be here to stay. Are you half full or half empty?
I am half empty on that while acknowledging how necessary it might be. I mean, it's just not an experience you want to have to sort of like book and schedule and get an allotted moment to appreciate. You know, the whole idea of nature is you're like, you just sort of throw yourself out there and absorb it and enjoy it, not like, now serving nature customer 5, 5, 5. Like, that's not how I want to experience Yellowstone.
I hear you. Okay, how do I feel about this? Because I've done a couple road trips the past couple summers to some of the big national parks, and I've been in those lines. It's really not fun, but I'm so glad people are getting out to see these amazing national parks. I can say I'm also pro national park. Yeah,
careful.
I think it's unfortunate.
They get canceled for that.
We need more, right? We need more space.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this is going to last. I mean, you said, Drew, it's here to stay. I wonder if the interest is going to last post, you know, pandemic, because that's really when this kind of took off, was when people were canceling their vacations and not flying. And so it was like, let's go to the outdoors. And yeah. But
maybe
I would much rather have a reserved slot and not feel like I'm on top of everybody other person than
well,
to.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we just need like more parks, you know, so that like they get less
we
crowded.
We totally need more parks.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Last topic, are you half full or half empty on the return of Taco Bell's Mexican pizza?
Amy?
Okay, I think it's time for a little confession. I love Taco Bell. Yeah, I do. But partly because I have been a vegetarian, mostly vegetarian, since I was 18. And back then, there weren't a lot of options. So it was like my go-to for road trips and, you know, when I was a broke high school student, like that's where my friends would and I would go to eat. There was one near our high school. So, but I don't know about the pizza because I think it probably has meat on it. So I can't. Oh. I can't weigh in on that particular thing. All I'm going to say is, like, you know, options are good.
Mm-hmm. It sounds amazing. It sounds amazing. I haven't had Taco Bell much since I was like a kid. But I do miss it. It was really good, and I'm sure that Mexican pizza is going to be real good.
Drew, do we know what's on this Mexican pizza?
I do not know.
All right.
I'm scanning here.
I may have to get back to you on this, right?
It looks like there is somebody who is like substituting beans for the beef for a vegetarian Mexican pizza.
There you go.
So it can be done.
That's my kind of person.
Seems to be huge with South Asian Americans, immigrants.
Hmm. Oh,
did you?
Interesting.
The substituting beans for the meat, you say?
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
I'm a big fan of green chilies on pizza, so I can see it being a good thing. Don't at me.
Drew, did you have anything to do with this question?
No.
I feel like this was a...
Don't you feel like somebody knew that I'm a, like, secret Taco Bell fan? I don't think I've shared that before publicly. But my family knows it well.
I'm a McDonald's person.
Ah, I think it's a pretty good time for us to wrap it up. I will be back on Monday with Kai for Tuesday's deep dive. We're looking into the growing rental market and how more and more investors are pouring money into building homes, not for sale, but for rent. And we're going to try to figure out what that means for wealth creation in this country.
Hmm. And if you've got any questions for us, you can send us a voice memo or email to makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a voice message. We are at 508-827-6278, or also known as 508-UB-SMART.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera and Marque Green. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie. Today's episode was engineered by the great Drew Jostad. The senior producer is Bridget Bodner.
The team behind our game is Stephen Bion, Mel Rosenberg, and Emily McCune, with theme music written by Drew Jostad. And the director of On Demand is Donna Tam. Stephen, did I get your name right this time? Slack me.
I think you did.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.